good morning and welcome to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Buck, and Calvin Butenhoff coming to you live from downtown Waukesha. You can always join us, call or text at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching in the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. He joins us every Friday, normally a little bit earlier, but he switched things around for us so we could talk to Angela Lang. Dan Schaefer is here from the award-winning Recombobulation Area. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing all right. A little discombobulated after a late night in Milwaukee and writing a column after Trump's marathon of a speech last night.
93 minutes.
But we're doing all right. I got a chance to sleep in a little bit today for the first time this week.
Oh, that's so good. I bet you were up really late.
I was. So, I saw the clock at 3 after I published my column.
Oh, so, boy.
You know. Oofers. Yeah.
Long work day, because you were on the show with us yesterday, and then I know you had a full day down at the RNC. So were you on the floor last night for a speech?
I was indeed on the floor of Pfizer Forum for the convention speech last night for the entirety. I got to the floor during Eric Trump's speech. So that means I was there for the Kid Rock portion of the show last night.
You lucky man.
There for Dana White's speech, and I was there for Donald Trump's 90 plus minute convention speech. I think they said it's the longest convention speech in modern political history.
Yeah, it was clocked in 93 minutes
in Milwaukee last night, and I wrote a column about it after I got home with some instant reaction. And I felt like the speech encapsulated the convention in a lot of ways. It started with this really, you know, kind of profound moment of describing surviving this assassination attempt. When he was speaking about that, it was just dead quiet on the convention floor. People were locked in. You could hear a pin drop in that building. But then, you know, as he always does, Trump is Trump. And the rest of the speech, kind of like the convention itself, started in this profound moment, but then just kind of devolved into the usual Trump, the typical MAGA, and just went on forever. And I think it just, by the end, it just served as a reminder to everybody just who this guy is and why we don't want him to be president again.
So much for the pivot. So much for acting presidential. I want to understand the context in which he brings up Hannibal Lecter. That makes no... I don't even know
how you...
You
mean the good guy, Hannibal Lecter?
How you even squeeze that in there to work to your advantage.
I think he just has these... He's almost like, you know, like a bad stand-up comic who's just like doing some joke that killed once for one random reason, and he's just doing it all the time now. I don't know. It's so bizarre. It has to be the strangest thing ever said in a political convention's nomination speech, right?
He thinks that he wants to have you for dinner is a great punchline, I guess. But again, in what context does this fit politically? It just is
Jane,
loony.
Why are you asking for context? Have you learned nothing?
A woman can dream.
It's true.
A woman can dream.
You could kind of see, so from parts of the convention floor, you could see the teleprompter from kind of like looking around. So if you turned around on the convention floor, you could kind of see what the teleprompter was supposed to be saying. And I wasn't in direct line of that, but I had to like kind of look around at certain points to see if I could see, like, what is he riffing about? You know, what context is this? Is he trying to get back to something? And I would look over at that teleprompter, and it would just be nowhere close to whatever he was talking about. So he would just go on these extended riffs about everything and nothing, and just meandered about, and, you know, and then would kind of go back to the moments of just like frightening deportation rhetoric or talking about migrant invasions. And I think it just was, you know, by the end, it was just, like I said, it's this reminder of what exactly Trump, who Trump is and what this MAGA movement is and what it encapsulates. And it's just how hollow it is, how out of touch with Americans it is, and how this is eminently beatable. This type of message is, because I thought Trump had an opportunity with this speech after the assassination attempt to really speak in a different kind of way. In a kind of historic moment for the country, and it started that way, But they just can't help themselves. They did by the end. It's just the same old Trump, same old MAGA.
Well, and from the coverage that I'm reading this morning, it seems like he left out some of his biggest accomplishments, almost like he didn't want to talk about them. I don't know, like abortion and I don't know, pardoning the January 6th attackers, the great patriots that are being held hostage. Why wouldn't you talk about that? He spent so much time on the campaign trail talking about what heroes they are and how he's going to pardon all of them.
Yeah, you didn't hear. Those are the two things you didn't really hear any of at the convention this week. Nobody brought up abortion, I think, in any of the speeches throughout the night, throughout the convention. Just obviously they know it's a losing issue for the Republican Party. And yeah, like you said, they didn't bring up any of like the election denier, stolen election, January 6th craziness. Because again, I think that's another issue where they're just wildly out of step with the mainstream of the country. And they know they're in the wrong on that one. I think there was kind of one moment in the speech where Trump said like, oh, they cheated because of COVID or whatever it was. And it was like, you know, you could tell him just, you could sense that he was kind of just ready to reach out and touch that hot stove of stolen election madness. He couldn't help himself, but he did kind of rein it in a little bit. Didn't really talk a whole lot about the stolen election stuff. And that was the case for the speakers throughout the convention, because I think they know it's just a ridiculous, ridiculous issue. And as soon as the cameras will be off of them, they will certainly go back to it. I have no doubt about that.
The thing you said before too is I feel like that where it started to where it ended was definitely, people saw that. People even who support him saw that. It started off one way and ended like real rambly, real kind of all over the place. And I heard a guy on CNN said the whole speech started with a lot of wet eyes because he was talking about the assassination and ended with a lot of closed eyes because they were falling asleep. Because it was so late, he was talking so long, but that overarching sense of, you know, where he started to where he ended up was really felt by a lot of people who on both sides of the aisle that it just wasn't his moment. And had he spoke for like 20-25 minutes,
he probably could have locked them all up.
Yep. Locked them all up. But man, like seriously, like there was a lot of questions at the end of it. Like, ooh, God, okay, what about his mental health?
Well, we do have a clip from Chris Wallace. After listening to Donald Trump's acceptance speech last night, Calvin, he's looking for the clip. It's in the second half. As he's looking for that. Some of the reviews have not been good.
No.
The reviews have not been good. And even from political commentators that I would expect to be firmly on Donald Trump's side.
Yeah.
But,
yeah,
but there don't seem to be a lot of accolades coming down on what a great performance it was.
The only people who are giving him A pluses are the ones who are like, he can do no wrong. He is the greatest person ever. He invented speeches.
Yeah, and you could get the feeling in the room too, because you know at a certain point, like everybody was standing at the beginning of the speech. Everybody on the floor, everybody in the seats and in the arena, everybody was standing. And then I think there was like a certain point in the speech. I would say about a third of the way through when he starts talking about crazy Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats this and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And I feel like that was kind of the turning point of it where it's just like, okay, he's getting away from the prepared remarks. He's going into usual Trump. And then not long after that, you had people sitting down. You had people kind of shuffling about on the convention floor. Whereas in the very beginning, everybody was just absolutely locked in and chanting along with everything. And I think he lost that room. That was just prepared the whole week to be 1,000% behind him. You know?
That also brings up a question too. Unlike any other RNC, DNC, he was there every night. He was visible. He was like talking to people.
He was napping.
We get tired, Jane. I feel like when the RNC or DNC, your moment's to come out on Thursday and be embraced and showered with applause and he was just there all the time. So you're like, oh, he's back. Here we go. 90 minutes? Are you kidding me?
Well, and that was the thing though. When he came out on Monday, you know, this is 2 days after the assassination attempt. He comes out with the bandage on his ear. He has the God Bless America performance with Lee Greenwood. That was like, that was genuinely a remarkable moment to be in the room for. But again, it's the convention is, you know, as a metaphor for the whole speech, it's just, it went off the rails by the end of it.
All right.
And it just devolved throughout.
Calvin, we're ready with that clip now. This is Chris Wallace after Donald Trump wrapped up his acceptance speech last night.
For all of that, it seemed as if he couldn't keep up the act. And so we started hearing about crazy Nancy Pelosi and cheating on elections and talking about Biden. Frankly, it was a long speech. It was a rambling speech. It was a speech by an older man. And I couldn't help but think the people that are going to be happiest tonight are not the people at Trump headquarters, but the people, the Democrats, maybe at Biden headquarters.
That's Chris Wallace last night commenting after Donald Trump wrapped up his acceptance speech at the RNC. Did he get in a jab at Paul Pelosi too, or was it just Nancy?
It was just Nancy.
I'm sure it was hard to avoid making jokes about the 80-year-old man who was attacked with a hammer, because that's usually a big laugh line when he's out on the campaign trail.
Yeah, I guess does that count for unity when it comes to Trump? Calling for political violence or celebrating political violence.
Look, there you go. Look at his restraint.
Yeah.
What a man of the people.
Trump. The new Trump.
And that's
just like the old Trump.
And that's exactly what I said before we got on the air. This is like the language of people, the media, they always want to say, anytime he's like for magnanimous for 20 seconds, they're like, it's a new Trump. This is a new Trump. He's finally understood. And then boom, just like any person with a habit, he's smoking in the corner again, or he's drinking again. He's disappointing us, but we're always like, it's a new, no, it's not. It's the same guy, same boss as the old boss.
Dan Schaefer is here from the recombobulation area. We will continue recombobulating. So I hope you'll stay here. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. She can't hurt. She don't mean no harm. She just welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Dr. Slide on the board, coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can always join us. You can call, you can text at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching in the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Dan Schaefer is here from the recombobulation area. He was on the floor last night as Donald Trump gave his very long acceptance speech and is now the nominee for the Republican Party to run for president. I did want to play this little clip for you, Dan. This just makes me laugh. We talked earlier this week about Matt Gaetz, congressman from Florida, trying to get up in Kevin McCarthy's grill when he was being interviewed on the floor of the RNC. Matt Gaetz taunting him because he didn't have a speaking role in the RNC because he's the ousted Speaker of the House. And then somebody said, told Gaetz he was being a douche waffle and go away, essentially. But Kevin McCarthy sat down with CNN last night after everything wrapped up and had these comments about Matt Gaetz. I think it's worth a listen.
He said you were to get booed off the stage. What's your response to him?
Well, he looks very unhinged. I mean, a lot of people have concerns about him. And I'm not sure if he was on something, but I do hope he gets the help that he needs. But more importantly, I hope the young women get the justice they deserve when it comes to him.
I mean, you're referring to the House Ethics Committee investigation that is ongoing.
Yeah, with his partner in jail because they paid underage women for sex and drugs. Yeah, that's what I'm referring to.
So he has denied all of that. I'm wondering, doesn't he deserve the presumption of innocence here?
Well, people are in jail. The women have confirmed it. He came to me. If I sort of still wanted to be speaker, I could have done something illegal and stopped the ethics committee investigation that started 4 years before.
He told you to stop the ethics
committee. Yeah, that's what the whole motion to vacate was about.
That seems somewhat juicy. Does it not?
There's a lot going on there.
Yeah, they're so mean to each other.
There's a lot going on there.
Well, I love the whole, I'm worried about him. Is he on something? We don't know. I'm just asking questions.
He's on Botox is what he is. Oh, boom.
It's like this B plot that no one is really asking for, but they're it's just like, why is this part of this show? Okay, all right. Yeah.
I look forward to that soap opera continuing.
It's a great spinoff show.
I do. I just think it will be.
Yeah, get its own series.
Yeah.
Get its, HBO miniseries on that one.
The other thing I think is worth pointing out is the number of felons and former felons that were at the RNC this week. Peter Navarro just got out of jail after serving a 4-month sentence over actions related to the January 6th attack. He was greeted with a standing ovation. Standing ovation for Peter Navarro. Paul Manafort was there.
Paul Manafort walked right by me on the convention floor at one point last night.
Did you just go, Paul Manafort? Because I would have.
Kind of. Yeah.
Because Paul Manafort also served some prison time until Donald Trump pardoned him right before he left office. For the party of law and order, they sure like...
breaking the law.
The opposite seems.
Well, you know, that's another thing I think to take away from this convention. This is Trump's party now, where there's no qualms about this having any connections to some sort of pre-Trump GOP, whether it was like the Kid Rock performance, whether it was the Amber Rose speech from the first night, whether it was, you know, just go through any, like you said, the list of, you know, ex-cons speaking at the convention and being celebrated there. I think this is what Trump's party is. And I think that's why so many people see it as such an eminently beatable presidential ticket with Trump on it.
Embrace the party of criminality.
Yeah.
It's all just right out there. And you're right, Dan. Yeah. I think, and I've heard some other commenters say the same thing though, about the complete capitulation now of any former Republicans to now be Trumpers. It is the Trump Republican Party. Eric Jr. or Don Jr. said that on January 6th. There is no longer a Republican Party. It is now Donald Trump's party. And they're right. They're right.
Yeah. And that to me is one of the big takeaways from the week. And it's just like, this is a version of the Republican Party that I think they have like these big tent ambitions. And I think that's why certain speakers were part of it. You know, the president of the Teamsters certainly didn't seem like a speaker that would be there in a pre-Trump GOP really in any capacity, but they have these big tent ambitions, but they're so undercut by the message of Trump himself.
Yeah.
I mean, think. Is the main thing.
Yeah. Know? Look at the woman who gave the, I think it was the revocation, the not the invocation. Well, she closed it out. She did a speech in her, I can't remember the
line. In Punjabi.
In Punjabi. And people were losing their minds. Like, if you don't embrace that people who don't look like you also support your policies, you're in trouble. When you're calling her like a worshiper of demons, this is a problem for your party that you just can't seem to square.
Dan Schaefer is here from the recombobulation area. We have a couple more minutes to recombobulate. Other takeaways from your week down at the RNC, Dan?
Yeah, so I think, you know, there's going to be stories to tell about, you know, just the economic impact. And I think around the city, the level of activity certainly not being what many people hoped for the week. But I will say that I think among those who were attending and among the people I talked to throughout the week, maybe people didn't explore the city the way a lot of us were hoping that they might. And a lot of people that wanted to host this convention were really advocating for. But I think the people who did attend have nothing but good things to say about the city of Milwaukee. And I am at least somewhat encouraged by that takeaway. because I do think, you know, after the horrible city comment, after living in this state and seeing how Wisconsin Republicans talk about our city here in Milwaukee, you know, I think there was a lot of concern that people would there would be some negativity. But and I think to whatever extent Milwaukee was able to show the world who it was, the people in attendance who the city is, I think the city came across really well. And I think people, you know, the people on the grounds, you know, just it did kind of have this all-inclusive resort type of feel to it. I don't think people really spent that much who were in attendance spent that much time outside of that security perimeter through the duration of the week. But I do think people just had nothing but good things to say about Milwaukee. And I'm really encouraged by that aspect of it. I'm trying to come away from the week with a positive here. And I think the way people talked about the city was terrific. And, yeah. And I'm glad that, you know, the city showed some northern hospitality for many of our visitors to the city.
Yeah, I've seen several articles like that the delegates at least seem to be walking away with good impressions. So we'll take that. We'll take that. Dan Schaefer joins us every Friday as we do the recombobulation area. Thanks so much, Dan. We will see you in a week. Get some rest.
Thanks for having me.
News is coming up next. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air, coming to you across the Civic Media Radio Network.
Strapped in the 210, wheels up and we'll be rocking, getting out of frozen Wisconsin. I need you to recombobulate me. I want you to recombobulate me. I need you to recombobulate me. Won't somebody recombobulate me?
Hello. Good morning and welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Box, Sweet Calby on the board, coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can join us. You can call, you can text. It is the same number, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching in the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. We're going to lighten things up for the last hour of last half hour. It's been a pretty heavy week.
Yeah, yeah.
It's been a long week. We were out at the RNC all week, back in the studio today. But I saw this news hit yesterday. This happened, I think, after we were off the air.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But Bob Newhart has passed away. He was 94.
He was amazing.
He was amazing. And I spent so much time last night. Go to YouTube and just search Bob Newhart. There are some brilliant, brilliant bits that he did that still hold up. The jokes work today. His telephone work.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. Yeah. His one-way his shtick, I don't want to say shtick, his routine was he would either talk on a telephone or some kind of communication device where you were only hearing him. You
right.
weren't hearing the other person, but you
right.
got the context by what he said. And we have a clip of something that he did, and we'll play it in a moment. But the great thing about Bob Newhart is that he was loved and worshipped in the comedy community by comedians of all ages, people his age and younger, down to people in their teens and 20s. Appreciated him, his work on, the Bob Newhart show, Newhart, Bob. He was the only person, I think, to have three shows named after him, but different. So it was the Bob Newhart show, there was Newhart, and then his last series he ever had was called Bob.
I don't remember Bob.
No one does, Jane. Didn't last long.
Well, he had two such successful sitcoms,
yeah.
The Bob Newhart show and then Newhart.
Yep. Which intertwined, if you know.
If you know.
Yeah. He was a reoccurring character on The Big Bang Theory.
Oh, that's right.
And he was...
He was Buddy's father in Elf?
Yes. Yes. I mean, he just... It's weird. If he was less talented, you'd be like, well, this is just the same old every time. But every time he was on screen, he always had that same... Not character, but just the delivery. And you were always there for it. He just always talked like this and just...
a little stumbly.
There was a little
stammery.
But it was all well thought out. It was all absolutely, it was all well crafted. And we have a clip of him from, this is probably one of his more famous pieces that he did on a talk show in the 60s. Back in the day, a comedian would go on in their suit and tie and do
right.
a tight, clean 5 minutes and just so wholesome. And it was absolutely wholesome. We could talk about his records after that, but Kelvin, if you play the air, this is the air traffic controller clip.
Oh, okay. All right. United 209. Yeah, we have radar contact. You're looking very good. Pan American 715. You haven't seen United 209 up there anywhere, have you? It's a big plane. It's one of those four engine jobs. It's got United on the side. You can't miss it. Well, if you see him, would you tell him to call in? Yeah. Yeah. 715, we're pretty jammed up here. I'm going to have to put you in the holding pattern. How's your visibility? Yeah, look off to your left about 3 miles over San Bernardino. Yeah, do you see all the planes? Yeah, just take a place anywhere there. You can find some. we'll call you back as soon as we have an opening. No, don't call us. We'll call you.
And what's funny is that back in the day, that's what he was known for. And in the 80s and 90s and afterwards, he did telephone things here and there, but people don't realize how synonymous he is with a telephone.
Yes.
I mean, his first album, The Button-Down Mind of Bob Newhart, for one thing, that album was an absolute phenomenon because, you know, when you think of albums coming out in those days back in the 60s, you're thinking of the Beatles, you're thinking of the Rolling Stones,
yeah.
You're thinking of all those like rock bands and pop bands. And here comes Bob Newhart with a comedy record released in 1960. And it topped the charts. It won Grammys, and not for Comedy Album of the Year, just Best Record.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And it just was absolutely a phenomenon. Number one on the charts for so many weeks in a row. This guy was just huge.
Well, and it's interesting because he was working as an accountant.
Yeah.
In Chicago, because he grew up in Chicago, and was doing some stuff on the side, you know, and working up some bits. And somehow someone heard one of his bits and then passed it on to someone at Warner Brothers, which is how the whole thing landed. And he essentially went from being unknown to that hit album to being a star.
I just feel like that doesn't happen anymore. The idea of, like, you know, I just had my job and one day someone's like, well, I know a guy at MGM and I'm going to pass your name along and you're going to be a star.
There is a bit that he does. He's the public relations manager for Abraham Lincoln.
Oh my gosh, yes.
And that's also another phone bit.
Yeah.
It is priceless.
Yeah.
It's just priceless, and it is still as funny today as it was when he debuted it. It's all about Abraham Lincoln wanted to change his look. And he's like, you got to keep the hat.
People,
you got to keep the hat and don't shave. Don't shave it off.
But one of the things that brought us to, like, you know, I could talk about Bob Newhart for hours. And one of the, you know, you can't talk about Bob Newhart without getting to a very important point about his life, which is Don Rickles. They were best friends.
And they got to be best friends because their wives are good friends.
Yes, yes. And I'm not going to tell the story because it makes me uncomfortable, because it just involves some, not swearing, but just some suggestive language. But I would suggest either watching Mr. Warmth. I would suggest watch both of them. But there's a documentary about Don Rickles called Mr. Warmth. And it talks a lot about Bob and Don, but especially Barbara and Ginny, their wives. And then also a mini documentary that The New Yorker put out that was made by Judd Apatow about Bob and Don's friendship. And they talk about how they met and Ginny being like, oh, this Don, he's such a nice guy.
Before she'd ever seen him go up on
exactly.
stage.
Exactly. And he's like, well, don't be so sure. And Don immediately ripped into them on stage. And that was, but they knew that was Don. But their friendship is something so beautiful that it's endearing, and it makes you want to have a friend like that. You'd be like, they went to China together as like two couples traveling.
Right.
I mean, it's just a beautiful story. And Bob just kept performing and doing his thing and staying in the zeitgeist, and people being like, oh my gosh, there's Bob Newhart, and just loving it so much. Him on Big Bang Theory is so fantastic.
If you have any favorite memories of Bob Newhart or something from one of his shows, please feel free to join us.
Yes.
You can either call, you can text at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching in the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. I found an old interview with Don Rickles and Bob Newhart on Phil Donahue.
Yeah.
It's an entire hour. I highly encourage you to find it. And Phil Donahue asked them both, how have your marriages lasted this long?
Yeah.
I mean, Bob Newhart and Ginny were married until she died.
Yeah, I think they were married for like 50 plus years.
And I think Don Rickles, I think he got married a little bit later.
He got married in his 40s and he was married to Barbara until he died.
Until he died.
And she died recently as well.
And Phil Donahue said, what is the secret to this longevity? And both of them said, well, I think it's because we make each other laugh.
Yeah.
Even after all this time, we can still make each other laugh. And you look at other comedy couples.
Yeah.
Who stayed together? I mean, Mel Brooks and Anne Bancroft.
Oh my God! And
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
And there's another piece of that too. I don't disagree. Like one of the reasons why I love being with my wife is I make her laugh and she makes me laugh. But there's an ingredient in that too that cannot be overlooked, which is when you talk about people like Mel and Anne, Bob and Ginny, Don and Barb, is that. Yeah, I talk about them like they're my aunts and uncles. That's what I'm doing, and I don't care what anyone says, is that they were also so crazy in love with each other. Don Rickles was so in love with his wife, and he spoke about her. So he would make fun of her and then immediately praise her and love on her so much. I think it's because they laughed, but I think it was because
they deeply cared
about
each other.
And Mel Brooks loved Anne Bancroft from the moment he saw her.
Right.
And that's another great documentary, The American Masters, Make a Noise, great documentary about him and talking about Anne Bancroft. But something that we brought up too beforehand, I was looking for the music for the Bob Newhart show.
It's just so iconic.
It's just so good. We talked about it before, and please share your thoughts with us too. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842, is that theme songs in the 70s just hit. They were good. They were like, they're not just like, just
background noise.
Background noise or, you know, like a little like a toe tap. These were songs. They were like, you could just be like, oh, this is so good. I could listen to this on a single every day and all day. And the Bob Newhart Show is one of those songs. It is funky and fun. I love it. I love it.
Bob Newhart did not win an Emmy until he had been on television for almost half a century.
Yeah.
And he also said at one point, I think the whole awards giving process needs rethinking. For starters, they should give lifetime achievement awards at the beginning of a performer's career. This way the person can still enjoy it while he's young, rather than giving to him when he's lost up most of his marbles in his onstage, wondering why are all these overdressed people applauding me? And then he also did. He did receive the Mark Twain, the Mark Twain Prize for American Humor.
Yes,
and
beyond deserved.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And he talked about his wife Ginny, and how they were recycling in California at that time, and she told him the night before, "You need to take the recycling out." And he said to her, "Would you say that to me if I was Paul Newman?" And she said, if you were Paul Newman, I wouldn't expect you to take out the garbage. Carolyn from Madison is on the line. Good morning, Carolyn. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi. I think it's on his first album, but I listened to it as a kid, and I'm 83 now. he's trying to convince the king or queen of England that the United States, or the tobacco in the United States, is going to make millions of dollars, or it's going to be a big profit. On the phone, he's like on the phone to the monarchy, and
it was Sir Walter. I think it was Sir Walter Raleigh, right? It was about Sir Walter Raleigh bringing tobacco. But yeah, that album. what is it? The
button-down mind,
Bob Newhart.
Yeah.
Some brilliant stuff on there. And that stuff, too. Thank you so much, Carolyn. Thank you so very much for listening. If you want to share your memories of Bob Newhart, you can do the same at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Bob Newhart gone at the age of 94, but will live on as one of the comedy greats.
Absolutely.
Of all time.
And what were your favorite TV theme songs? We got some.
We have some good ones racked up.
Oh. I you know, it's weird. It speaks a lot to him, though. We said it's been a heavy week, and we start talking about the death of a comedy great, but it still brings us joy and smiles and happiness, and he's so loved, and it's taken everything in me not to be emotional over, because I grew up watching him, and I feel lucky to have been able to do that, from the Bob Newhart show to Newhart to everything else he's done.
Go on YouTube, search for some of his stuff. You will laugh your head off and feel better about the day.
Yeah.
And yeah. Share with us your favorite TV theme songs. We got one more break left. Stay right here. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Good morning. Welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, the Calvinator on the board, coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. Another beautiful day. You can join us. You can call. You can text 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching in the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter before you joined us. If you're just joining us, we've been talking about Bob Newhart, who died yesterday at the age of 94. Wonderful comic. Just such classic stuff. And also classic theme song.
Yeah.
A very, very classic theme song that got us talking about some of the great theme songs from the 1970s. And there were a lot of them.
I think that's where the theme songs were the best. You know, the 50s and 60s had like flourishes like, ooh, welcome to the thing. But, 70s got grittier, a little dirty, funkier, fun.
Sweet.
Yes, indeed. I mean, and we're getting texts from you, see, WKRP in Cincinnati, that's one that's, even if you don't know the show, you've heard the theme.
And you sing along to it.
Very iconic, yeah. The Maude theme is very, very good as well.
Oh, yeah.
Maude is, we're just like, yeah, I love that one. I gotta say, like, I want to play one of my favorites. Calvin, can you play Barney Miller? Come on.
So good.
Please. I want to start a band that just jams on TV theme songs from the 70s. Oh.
And Hal Holbrook was hot.
Yes, he was.
I'm sorry.
Calvin, do we have a fire extinguisher? I believe Jane needs some cooling down.
I love that. That Barney Miller was so good. Again, it was another one of those fantastic ensemble casts.
Yeah.
That I couldn't see anybody else in any of those roles.
Yeah. I mean, and like really talking about concepts of like diversity and struggle and things like in the 70s, it was, I mean, I was at most 2.5 in the 70s, but watching those shows as a kid, especially nowadays, I feel like there was something they nailed. It was a little more raw in their messaging.
Yeah.
Cause they weren't worrying about anything. And I don't want to get into a conversation about cancel culture and people are sensitive. That's not for here. And I don't come with me with that. But like in the 70s, they just, it was raw, and they talked about it, and they said words then that they do not say now. I'm not going to say them here.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, but the theme song itself, Barney Miller, is just so funky and so fun. And I pulled a couple other ones. Calvin, can you play Welcome Back, Cotter?
Where John Travolta started.
Yep. It was supposed to be a vehicle for Gabe Kaplan.
Oh, my.
Yep.
And he just got overshadowed. Yep. I mean, it was still, that was another great ensemble show. Yep. It really was.
And John Sebastian, who is one of the great American singer-songwriters, that's him.
And I saw him perform this on Saturday Night Live. He was so nervous.
Oh.
He had to start over.
Oh.
It was, I felt so badly for him.
Oh, but
I felt so badly for him, but he pulled it off.
He just wanted to do so. He was just wanted to do good. I mean, we're getting, like, seriously, All in the Family, Sanford and Son.
Oh, Sanford and Son.
Sanford and Son is just wonderful. I mean, seriously, folks, go back and, like, just either listen for the first time or re-listen. And with when it's not about to cut into the show, just listen to the whole song. And I mean, for me, my money is like, I don't know, Jane. For me, and you might disagree on both, but my two favorites are Taxi and MASH. And those two songs are just absolutely like when you talk about a show like Taxi, it's a wacky sitcom,
mm-hmm.
a wacky three camera sitcom in front of a live studio audience with wacky Andy Kaufman and irascible Danny DeVito. And here is their theme song.
So sweet.
That's so weird. I always think it's so depressing.
You do? I think it's sweet.
It's just, yeah, for me, it's
like driving at night.
Because if you watch the theme on the show, they're driving across the bridge, and all I have in my head is like, it's the monotony of life in your job that you'll never get out of.
Oh, see, and that's it. I look at it entirely differently.
Yeah.
I'm driving in the city. It's a beautiful night. Look at all the sparkly lights. I'm a taxi driver.
I'm a taxi driver.
That's what I am.
I'm a taxi driver in New York. What do you want? Pizza gabagoo. Hey.
Listener, listening on WMDX in Madison, I went to school in Oshkosh. We didn't go out on Saturday nights until after Bob Newhart and the Mary Tyler Moore shows.
That's what those shows had hold on you. Like you, because there was no, I mean, you could tape them, but there was no DVR. There was no streaming. There was none of that stuff. You wanted to catch it the night it premiered.
If you missed it, you were out.
Yeah, you weren't going to see until repeats, maybe like a month or two later.
Car 54, where are you? That's going way back.
That's an old one. That's an old one there. Jane, what about you? Like, do you have a fave?
Well, certainly WKRP, largely because I've been in radio for so long.
Yeah.
But there are still things about that show that are so accurate. In off-kilter ways.
Yeah.
But Mary Tyler Moore show was a big one. The Carol Burnett theme song for her variety show.
Oh, my God. Yes.
Would be another one for me. There's just so many. Hill Street Blues would be another one that came along much later, obviously. Yeah. But Tom says Facts of Life.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Hawaii 5-0.
Oh, yeah. I had Calvin pull also one that was the 80s, but still, like, in my mind, it's like right up there with Barney Miller and it's funky. Can you play Night Court?
We were much bigger into bass back then.
Yeah, we
loved
slapping the bass. We loved slapping the bass back in the day.
Well, we're remembering Bob Newhart.
Yeah.
Gone at the age of 94. We will put some links in our notes, in our show notes. If you want to go look at some of his old material, go to YouTube and just search for Bob Newhart and treasures will come up that will keep you entertained for several hours.
Yes. And share it with your kids. I mean,
oh, absolutely. This is stuff you can watch with your kids.
This is wholesome. It's family friendly, but I think it's timeless comedy. It's comedy that still works because it's about delivery and it's about style versus content, if you will. It can be about anything. So,
all right. Thank you so very much, Greg and Calvin and all of our engineers for getting us on the air and running. Thank you most of all for calling and texting and for listening. It absolutely means the world. I hope you find some joy over the weekend and you have the chance to share it. Stay tuned. News is next, followed by Todd Alba. Keep it right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. See you Monday.